Hey, Mr. Hackett, what you gonna do? What you gonna do to make my dreams come true?
Do we have to do this?
We do have to do this. We can talk about the cold open first.
I'm not sure that's any better.
Oh, what do you think, Bippy? I can't even do it.
I don't want to do the cold open.
I don't want to do it. I don't want to do Scott. I don't know what's worse. Anyway, we're talking about season 6, episode 12, Scott's Tots, originally airing on December 3rd, 2009. I can start with some facts instead of talking about the feelings of this episode. BJ Novak directed this episode.
Nice. Is this his first?
I believe it is. If his directorial debut is his first, it's his first. So, yes.
First annual debut.
It's according to Dunderpedia, so, you know. Take that with what you will, but that's what it says, and that's what I'm going with.
Sounds good to me.
Oh, all right. I was going to try and do an Elvis voice, but then I think it was just going to end up as Joey from Friends.
No, you gotta, we need to hear this.
No. Hey, baby.
That does sound like Joey from Friends.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh. I mean, I live in Elvis's hometown, you know, Graceland is here, but...
Oh, there you go. My mom was born on Elvis's birthday. We could just talk about weird facts instead of this episode. I'm into that.
Okay, so the cold open. Andy's in trouble with the boss.
Andy's in trouble. Sorry.
Because there have been complaints. That may or may not be true. It may just be that Michael's annoyed that Andy's using baby talk. And Michael doesn't like it because it makes it seem like Michael hires babies.
You are also on record as saying widow idle, footy woodies, num nums, jammies, make boom boom, widicowis, and woad iwind.
Do I sometimes replace R's with W's? Do I sometimes repeat a word to get my point across? Well, if I do, Andy saw we.
You can't be a baby in the office.
It's odd to see Michael get upset about unprofessional behavior in the office.
Seriously.
But here we are. I think there probably was more complaints than just Michael alone. But I don't know. I feel like it might have been it might be like a Toby issue instead.
Yeah. Where's Toby? Right?
Yeah, exactly.
He's out strangling people.
Probably. He is out strangling. That's
just
what he's
kidding.
Just no, kidding. You're not kidding. It's true.
Calm down.
I'm sorry.
And yeah, so they have this back and forth, and Andy's like, well, I could say that I have, you know, Andy's tummy has a boo-boo, or I could talk about how my crippling IBS is flaring up. But
it's like, we could talk about neither. How about neither?
Yeah, how about neither? But then Andy's is like, hey, you know, some people say your Elvis voice is bad, but then they end up just talking to each other in those voices.
I think it's pretty fantastic.
Well, thank you. Thank you a lot. And for what it's worth, I think your baby voice is topped.
Thank you, Mr. Elvis.
You're welcome, baby.
I really enjoy this cold open. I think it's cute and sweet, and I like seeing these two characters together in this way because they do both have that's, I don't want to say sense of humor because it's not that, but they have these like personalities where they'll get addicted to doing a funny voice and can't stop.
Sure.
So it's really fun to see them together. And I really do think that it's kind of cute.
Little baby Andy. All right.
So, okay. This episode for me, I always forget the B plot that happens. So we have the A plot of the awful, cringy Scott's Tots. But then we also have the B plot of what's going on in the office. And when I do watch throughs, I skip this episode almost every single time.
Me too.
And watching it again, I forgot all the stuff that actually happens in this episode with Dwight's conspiracy or Dwight's evil plot that we watch unfold. So that part was kind of nice to see again.
Let's do that first, then. Let's talk about the B plot first.
Oh, but that means we had to end on the sad. I'm a big fan of like eating the frog first and getting rid of like the bad stuff.
It's extremely graphic. Okay,
it's not graphic. It's a business technique.
It is if you're a frog. All right. So we learn that the Michael Scott Foundation still exists. Stanley knows all about this. I love Stanley's role in this episode because 10 years ago, Michael promised a bunch of kids, they were in third grade at the time, that he would pay their college tuition. And of course, it made the newspaper. And of course, Stanley cut it out and saved it. And he's like, oh my God, has it been 10 years? And he just cannot stop laughing. It is so good. I love Stanley in this.
What's Scott's tots?
Has it really been 10 years? Local businessman pledges college tuition to third graders.
He was waiting for this ball to drop for 10 years.
You know, pretzel days once a year, the 10-year anniversary, and, you know, Scott's tots coming to, you know, that coming to pass. That's once in a lifetime.
We also find out that they have canceled 7 times for him to go and show up at this school. Yeah.
There's a comment when he gets to the school, like, we know your schedule is always changing.
So for me, it starts off being super painful. It's not when Pam starts berating him of, like, you've done this awful thing.
Michael, this is a terrible, terrible thing you've done.
Well,
it's terrible.
It's when he has the voiceover and on screen you're watching and he's pulling out all of the kid art, like this box of kid art that he has kept. And it's like full on colored construction paper, popsicle stick, like thank you notes, I love you, like all this stuff. That is when it starts to kill me. Like,
yeah. And he knows them all by name. Like he's clearly been involved. It's not just a promise that he walked away from, although he will. It is that he's been involved in these kids' lives. And yeah, it's tough. Something else that happens about in this period and also happens in the B plot is Michael's really hard on Aaron in this episode. Like he wants Pam to go with him instead of Aaron. And in the B plot, he like says something rude about Aaron as she leaves the room, and that comes back around at the end of the episode. But that's like, it's not really a C plot. It's just sort of a thing that runs through the episode where Aaron is kind of dumped on by Michael.
Well, Aaron plays the role that Pam has in the past, where as the receptionist of the office is kind of also Michael's assistant. And now that he is going on this meeting or he is invited to the school, that she is there to kind of be his roadie. You know, she's carrying the suitcase just like Pam did. She is making the schedule. She's taking down the itinerary. So she's playing this role that we've seen Pam play before. And Michael is definitely making comparisons.
Yeah. And Pam comes out on top, apparently.
He misses Pam.
Would you come with me, you know, like old times instead of...
I can print out a new itinerary with Pam's name on it.
It's fine. Aaron, you're going to go, and you're going to make sure Michael tells the truth.
Oh, God. You know what? Could this day get any worse?
Okay.
I know. We're like putting...
So they go to the school.
Let's take long pauses.
Yeah. They go to the school. They're in a classroom. There's all the kids. There's parents and teachers. They're chanting his name. They have matching Scott's Tots shirts. They put on a dance routine. They're celebrating his promise that it's coming to pass today.
Yeah, because we see all these kids that he made these promises to are on track for graduating. And so this is their senior year. And so now they invited Michael to make a presentation and just honor him in the wonderful thing that he said he was going to do, which was pay for these kids' college tuition. And again, like you said, his familiarity with all of these kids, you know, knowing everyone's names, knowing what instruments they play, remember, like, going to school events.
Mr. Scott?
Hey, Michaela Lasker, how are you?
I'm good.
Good to see you. Where's your saxophone?
It's in the music room, Mr. Scott.
Eighth grade graduation, she gave a rendition of When the Saints Go Marching In that would blow your freaking mind.
Like, so we can infer that he has been kind of involved with these kids this whole entire time, has been spending his free time outside of work participating and like going to homecoming games and just being around as this figure, and never ever once stepping back and being like, maybe he made this promise and he just like disappears. No, mm-hmm. He made this promise and he was there all the time. They all know his name. They all know his face. Like, it, he knows the principal and the teachers. It's a big thing that he has done. He has full on committed to this promise. And the sad and hurtful thing in my heart is that he did have every intention of keeping it. He really wanted to do this thing for these kids. He isn't a sadist. Like, he's not making this promise to just all of a sudden turn around and be like, ha ha, suckers, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's not his intention. Psych. Here. So that's why it hurts, because he really believed it was true, but it was really very hurtful to these kids.
Yeah. And to the community at large, right? Because the teachers and the parents and everyone else in that room also they've been built up by this, right? It's been something to look forward to, and they're all very upset when it finally comes out.
Now let's put your hands together and give a warm welcome for the man of the hour, Mr. Michael Scott.
I am never going to forget today. Not a chance.
Yeah, you're not. Neither are they. You know, no one is going to forget about this. And he sort of winds his way to it. You know, we've seen Michael not want to give bad news before. And we've seen Michael draw out stories. And this is sort of both of those things at once.
I came here today because I promised you tuition. And tuition is very valuable. But you know what's invaluable? Is intuition. You know what that is? That is the ability to know when something is about to happen. Does anybody out there have intuition? Know what's going to happen next? Nobody? Okay. You're going to make me say it. All right.
Hoping someone else will say it so he doesn't have to.
He is kind of a master at making these connections when he's selling. He's trying to sell here, and it's not going well. This is also, I mean, he's in quite the emotional state. He just had to sit through all of these thank you presentations, this amazing dance, the song they basically wrote for him, like you were saying.
Hey, Mr. Scott, what you gonna do? What you gonna do? Make that dreams come true.
And made a promise that made us honest, made us realize we don't need to compromise, because we can have it all, because you made it possible for us to achieve the improbable.
And there is a couple shots of him like crying, like it was as if he's crying for joy, but he's feeling that heartache too. And man, you have to really swallow some pride to go up there and be able to face this group of kids and say what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And he tries to talk around it and to make it sound better. He's trying so much. There's even a point where, as he's telling them, everyone just, they protest heavily when he finally says it. They just lose it, as they should. They can't believe it. They're like, what? You're not paying for my tuition. And then to top it all off, as Michael is still talking, he greatly infers that he has laptops for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out the laptops are only laptop batteries. And on top of that, they're lithium.
They're lithium.
My dream was in the right place.
You owe this to us.
Okay, hold on. Hold on. Now, I can't pay for your college. But you don't have to go to class to be in class. Online courses are a viable option to a traditional college experience. And the best way to access those courses is with your own personal laptop, which is rendered useless without batteries. And I have one for each of you. Hold on. lithium.
Turns out, we find out in a minute that not everybody even took one.
The people writing this episode really do know how to make the tallest, most layerful, awkward cake. They really pile on this episode more than any other episode of The Office, truly.
Yeah. It just keeps getting lower and lower.
It's so difficult to watch after on the heels of like so much joy that this mm-hmm. day was supposed to be. And one of the students comes out of the classroom as Michael is finally leaving. Like, I feel like he is feeling a little relieved that he actually said it. He got this, you know, out, that he did not want to tell these kids these things. He finally did it. He's finally leaving. And one of the kids follows him out and just heart to heart tells him like how awful that was and how much that hurt. And Michael ends up trying to give him a second laptop battery, but instead pays for his books and writes these checks. And I think having this scene and seeing that Michael is like, I'm dating them a year apart, please call me before you cash them. You know, like the idea that writing a check for $1,000 that's going to be cashed every year is going to be a big blow to Michael financially, that he's very worried about this, is kind of humanizing for Michael. Like, it's upsetting that he couldn't keep his promise, but we are seeing that like he really wanted to be this person. He wanted to be this, you know, philanthropic, like give these kids a chance person, and he just really, really isn't. And when faced with it, he is willing to give away like the money that he does have, even though it's not very much. Like, he's trying.
Yeah, I think you're right. His heart was in the right place, and he wasn't able to make it work. And he does own up to it, but boy, it's hard to watch.
Yeah, it's really difficult to watch, even though we know it kind of like, it doesn't resolve well because, you know, these kids are disappointed. But I think the best part of how this all comes together in the end is on the car ride home, him and Aaron is driving, because very much like Pam, Aaron's driving and Michael is the one in the passenger seat. Aaron is just mindlessly singing the song that the kids sang because it's very catchy.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do? Hey, what you gonna do?
Please stop.
What you gonna do?
It brings about like a conversation. Aaron mentions that the school principal said to her that 90% of the Scott's Tots kids are on track for graduating, and then that is 35% higher than the rest of the school. So even though it was a terrible thing that a lot of these kids now probably can't continue on to college, or if they do, they're going to have a much more financial struggle with it than they initially thought. But they went further in school than maybe they would have if they hadn't had that promise in the back of their mind. It did make them succeed a little bit further. And I, even though that's true, it's like that's the silver lining of this whole thing.
Yeah, and I'm glad that we see that as the audience, because it does redeem. I mean, Michael's not off the hook here. This is terrible. But yes, it's a little bit of redemption in a pretty bad situation.
This is nothing anyone should go out and do and lie to a bunch of children in order to get them to graduate high school a little bit more. But it did do that.
Still don't do it. Not recommended.
Still, yeah, please don't do this. So that's where that gets resolved. And we see them in the car singing together the Scott Tot song, which... that's in super poor taste. It's like, yeah, I did do a good thing. Like, yeah. Oh no, Michael, no.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's going to be making any like $1 million promises anymore.
No. And I guess let's come back to his conversation with Aaron, because I think it's important to see what happens in the B plot too.
I agree.
So while all this is going on, back in the office.
The safe place of the office.
That's right. Andy has an idea for Dr. Tuna. He thinks that people are, you know, it's this kind of people kind of bummed out in the office, and an employee of the month program would be an immediate morale transplant.
Every awesome place I've worked had one.
We also learn that Andy has worked lots of terrible places that go out of business, including Lehman Brothers, AIG, and Enron. So there's that.
We always get these little trickles of facts about Andy. I just want to ask you before we get into the main plot of the employee of the month. Every time someone enters Jim's office, I feel so uncomfortable. It is not the right size. Like, the feng shui of this place just irks me so much. I hate Jim's office.
It's not very deep, but it's pretty wide. Like, there's lots of room.
That's what she said.
Wow. Wow.
It's for the show. It's for the show.
Dr. Tuna.
Anyway, Jim's office, very uncomfortable.
So there's that. And Jim thinks it's a good idea. You know, people are worried about the company going out of business, you know, all that's still going on. And so Jim goes to find Michael. Aaron is going through Michael's email, and we learn a lot about Michael's email inbox. It's all terrible.
There's a bunch of sent emails that just say delivered. Should I delete those?
I want to keep those so I can see what I sent.
That's why you have a sent mail folder.
Keep.
There's about 30 news alerts for nip slip.
For what?
Nip
slip. Oh, okay. I don't know how those get on there.
Well.
Must be hackers.
And he actually agrees that, hey, this is a good idea. And then Aaron chimes in. He's like, hey, you know, you're listening in. You need to go. And then as Aaron leaves, he says, you know, I miss Pam. Like, you know, kind of really rude to Aaron. And Jim's like, you know, I think she's doing a good job. But really hurtful, I think, to say that.
Yeah, we have been for the last couple episodes setting up this precedent since he came back from the Michael Scott Paper Company that the idea of Aaron even being there is just kind of extra. I think it's almost like setting up, like, I feel like maybe the audience even feels like Aaron might be a person in the cast that might be temporary because of the way Michael treats her as like this fringe extra person that he's never really bothered to get to know. And I feel like maybe that's also a reflection of the way the audience is feeling. Like, we haven't really gotten to know Aaron very much. Like, she is still kind of on the fringe of the main cast that we see and follow every single week.
We also learn that this actually isn't Andy's idea. It's Dwight's idea, but in a way that Andy thinks it's his idea.
Jim's talking to Michael right now. They totally went for our idea.
Yeah! Your idea.
My idea.
Yeah, this is like a double, triple turns out here, because it turns out it's Dwight's idea, and then double turns out it's actually a plot to take down Jim, which it seems like that is all that Dwight is doing these days, is just trying to constantly take down Jim.
Yeah, this is another step on this plot, and we learned that the pin recorder has not been discovered yet. It's he's still using it.
I mean, yeah, we got it. We had to see that spy pen again.
That's right. It's not a duck. It's a mallard. So this is Dwight's idea. He's playing Andy to play Jim, and the plan is that Jim's going to be fired by David Wallace in 6 hours. And really, Dwight's plan goes pretty well, as we see. I think it all, you know, sometimes Dwight's plans really don't go well, but this one, the end result isn't what he wanted, but the mechanisms he put in place all work. You got to hand it to Dwight and his diabolical plan this week.
Yeah, he's really had the steps. He used Andy as his patsy. Then he starts up the cash collection to have this secret cash prize to put Jim into a bad position. He makes up this crazy list to make sure that it appears as though Dwight is trying to make himself employee of the month. So Jim takes a hold of it in order to be anonymous as possible and to try and be like, okay, I'll take control of this. I don't want one of the employees to have control of this so that no one can pick themselves. So yeah, every step of the way, it seems like Jim is taking Dwight's bait. Dwight's really thought about this, and he has social engineered it so that it really doesn't seem like him.
Yeah, Dwight's scoring system is pretty good. So it's anonymized, so each employee has a number. It has a couple of different factors that he takes out. So Jim removes self-defense and survival skills. And I guess by doing that, it all lines up the way that Dwight wants it to. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so Jim takes it. He's going to go gather this information. It's like hours and, you know, tardiness, you know, the kind of normal employee stuff. And while Jim's doing that, Dwight is going around collecting money because Jim said in a perfect world, there'd be a cash prize, which is enough for Dwight to go around and collect quite a bit of money from various people. We see Kevin and Oscar donate, but apparently everyone did.
I know you're all very excited, but no matter who gets this, I just want to say that you guys are all employees of the month in my eyes. And the winner is employee number 9, and that is...
And when he calls the name, it's himself. And as we expected, the entire office erupts in protest and they all have something to say and they are all upset. And Dwight has this coy little smile, like he is expecting all of it to go exactly as he planned. And it is. Everyone is really upset that mm-hmm. Jim seemingly picked himself, even though Jim tries to talk his way out of it, but he's so taken aback by this happening, he can't get himself out of it very quickly.
Number nine, Jim Halpert.
What?
Huh? What?
Are you kidding?
Oh, no. Okay, wait.
That was not. How come not?
Guys, listen. This was anonymous. All right, there's no way I could have given it to myself because I didn't even know who was on here. I just gave it to the employee with the highest overall score.
So he's won his own parking spot. So I guess Jim was giving his parking spot up to the winner. A vacation day, all the cash that was collected.
Which ends up being a big surprise to Jim.
Yeah, he's like, wait, cash? And yeah, so he's like, well, okay, let's just pick whoever's next. Like, clearly this is a mistake. So the next employee is number 3, and turns out number 3 is Pam.
Pam gets a little offended that the office can't possibly believe that she has won.
Yeah.
Pam Halpert.
What? How is that possible? No offense, Pam, but how the hell is that possible?
There must be some reasonable explanation for this.
Oh, wait, come on. I didn't miss a day. I came in early, I stayed late, and I doubled my sales last month.
So I really like that she is sticking up for herself, even though Jim is very shocked and he doesn't think that that should be true because it looks so bad on him right off the heels of his win. But I feel a little bad for Pam that she's like, hey, you guys, like, why not? I mean, Phyllis is down on it. There's this great joke that's made about how she doubled her sales. And Andy tries to make fun of her.
Oh, really? From what? 2 to 4?
And she has that great little, like, tiny 2 seconds of confessional that they edited in, and she goes,
yep.
Oh, yeah. And then our wonderful little Creed Corner moment where he accuses Pam of possibly not even being pregnant because the Halperts are just so devious.
Yeah, which is great.
And this is part of Dwight's plan the entire time. So he definitely rigged the point system to be Jim and then to be Pam. And everyone gets so mad. But they don't go and report him to David Wallace like Dwight kind of implied would happen. Instead, Dwight uses everyone's voices to report to David Wallace all of the happenings of the day and how upset everybody is.
David Wallace's office.
This is Kevin Malone. Is David there?
This is Stanley Hudson. Jim Halpert is a menace.
It's Toby Flenderson. Listen, things are getting really bad down here.
He does a pretty good job.
And so, yeah, so we see David call Jim and he goes off on him. Right. He's like, I've got all these complaints. You put this thing together trying to give you and your wife money. Like, what is happening? And Jim is like, you know, I don't know how it happened. He apologizes. And this is where Dwight's plan falls apart. We see David apologize, or we hear David apologize to Jim. You know, hey, I know you're doing a good job down there. I'm sorry. Like, this is all really stressful at corporate. Oh, are we still on for dinner this weekend? Which just makes Dwight's blood boil.
Oh, because, yeah, he's listening to this on the pen, and it's just, oh, that kills him, that another plan completely foiled.
Yep.
He tries so hard. Because, I don't know, what Dwight is picturing this relationship of just being business-related, but Jim is a personable person.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like his relationship with David Wallace, it has a more personal level to it, so that there is more like understanding and back and forth and mutual respect that can often supersede like a problem or a difficulty that happens. So it's always good to be a little bit more personable, and that is working to Jim's advantage here. And that's something that Dwight never considered.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right. And I think it shows that Dwight is, not that Jim's playing political games, but I honestly don't think he is. I think he's just
no.
personable. But it shows how out of touch Dwight is with that whole scene. Right?
Exactly.
And that while Dwight's plan went perfectly, he just didn't understand how it was going to play out in the end.
So that basically wraps up the B plot. We should talk about how Michael and Aaron get a little bit resolved from the beginning of the episode, where Michael is just down on Aaron, and it seems like Aaron is trying her best to do everything to please Michael in this episode, and he isn't feeling it. And he is a type of person that cannot hide his emotions very well, and so he is letting it show very easily that he feels that him and Aaron aren't jiving, even though he's demanding a lot of her.
Yeah, I think after the conversation where she says, hey, you know, the principal told me this stuff, I think that softens him towards her. And yeah, he asks Aaron what she wants out of the job. You know, like, what do you want out of your time at Dunder Mifflin, assuming the company doesn't go under? And she says, well, you know, I've been interested in accounting. Maybe that could be something I could pursue. And then he tells this story about Kevin. Kevin came in answering a wanted ad for a warehouse position, but he saw something in Kevin, and he made Kevin an accountant instead. And then he says, you know, I see something in you too. And it is sweet, and it's nice, and we see their relationship evolve over the coming episodes and seasons. But it's a nice connection point for the two of them after kind of living through this terrible day together.
Yeah, he compliments her on a job well done, and I think that is a nice way of seeing them come together. And then they both sing the Scott's Tots song, yeah, awkwardly in the car. Before the very end of the episode, we do see the end of the day closing out at Dunder Mifflin, and Ryan approaches Dwight with something he found in the copier. And it is a copy of Dwight's diabolical plan, and Ryan wants in.
He does. It's labeled Diabolical Plan by Dwight K. Schrute.
You can't leave your manifestos lying around in copiers. You just can't. You got to check for that stuff.
That's true. That is true. And Ryan wants in. Ryan wants to take down Jim Halpert. And if you remember when Ryan was in charge, you know, there was a lot of friction between the two of them. And Ryan has never really liked Jim, and now he feels like, okay, well, with Dwight involved, we can do this together. And so I think we're going to see more of that as we continue to move forward this season.
And we are just coming off the heels of Jim putting Ryan in a closet,
yes,
for his workspace. So mm-hmm. I think Ryan's a little angry at Jim,
yep,
and would love to see a little revenge, even if it's, you know, kind of fairly benign office revenge, but I guess it's not super benign if they're trying to take his job and livelihood.
Trying to get the CFO to fire him, that feels like a big deal.
Yeah. The intentions are a big deal, but the results are usually pretty mild.
It's true.
Oh, so we got through it. We never have to talk about this episode again. It is nice to remember and connect that there was a B plot in this episode that followed our regular office antics. Mm-hmm. So,
and a pretty good one. I like the B plot.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And it connects Ryan into the diabolical plan that I think that was something that I've missed for many years not watching this episode.
Yes.
Well, Stephen, unlike Michael, we have something to give out that is better than a lithium battery.
a whole laptop.
No, we have a Dundee.
Woo!
And this week's Dundee, I'm calling the Wikipedia Brown Award, and it goes to Adrian Mester over in our conference room members only Slack for answering our call and helping us learn about Ernte Dankfest, which is a German harvest festival with parades and wheelbarrow races, music, fair rides, food stalls, and a clogs ball.
A, I want to go to this real bad, but what's a clogs ball?
It's apparently where cloggers go and dance.
Like a clog off?
I'm not 100% sure. I mean, I think that that's a whole nother deep dive into what that actually is, but it is part of Ernte Dankfest, and I could see why Dwight would want it to be an everyday.
Indeed.
So we would like to thank Adrian. So get on up here and accept your Dundee.
Woo!
Congratulations. And if you answered us on Twitter, we saw your tweets. And thank you so much for reaching out and giving us all those wonderful answers. We looked at them all and I had to check the timestamps to see who came in first. And it was Adrian. So thank you very much for everyone for answering that for us, because I feel more enlightened knowing what Ernte Dankfest is.
Me too.
And like Steven, I definitely want to go.
Let's go.
So next week, we will be back talking about Secret Santa. It's Christmas again.
It is. We just did this.
It's okay. It's still January. Little Christmas, right? Isn't that a thing?
Sure.
I don't know really when that is. I'm sure that's relevant to a lot of people, but for me, I have no concept of
they
it.
They call it dry January in some places.
What?
Well, it's a different thing.
I think that's really different.
I think so.
Yeah, that's different. It's certainly not dry for the office Christmas, that's for sure. But we will be back talking about Secret Santa. And until then, you can go and check us out on Twitter at @tall_beats. Or you can go find us over on The Incomparable. We are Tiff Arment and ISMH.
Yes, ISMH.
And ISMH individually over on Twitter. And I don't know, are you that on Instagram? Are you on Instagram?
Yeah, it's Stephen M. Hackett on Instagram.
Oh man,
someone else
we're
has
just
it.
Oh, you gotta fight.
I tried
for your right to party.
Wow.
All right, let's put this episode to bed. Okay. Because I can't think about Scott's tots anymore. I should get you a t-shirt.
No.
For Christmas.
No.
For little Christmas.
Hey, Mr. Scott, what you gonna do? What you gonna do? Make our dreams come true.